Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. Before we get into the podcast today, I'd just like to say a big thank you to everybody that attended the UK Investor Magazine Metals and Mining Virtual Conference this week. For anybody that didn't catch it, the videos of the investor presentations from the three companies will be available on the UK Investor Magazine video section very shortly. So do check that out if you did miss the presentation last night. So for today's podcast, we're going to be discussing a number of UK equities and key themes in markets. And to do that, once more, we have with us Alan Green. Alan, thanks for being with us today.
Hello, John. Good to be back.
So, Alan, we have a number of equities, as usual, that we're going to be discussing. Some of them are going to be updates on companies we've discussed before. And some of those are going to be major FTSE 100 companies with some very good results that we're going to be covering. But, Alan, as always, we always like to look at what's been happening in markets. If we're looking at the FTSE 100, you know, taking away any news that's going on at the moment, the actual price action of the FTSE 100 hasn't been particularly volatile. But if you're looking at the headlines from news outlets, of course, it's very hard to get away from the situation that we touched on last week and what's going on with Russia and Ukraine. We've obviously seen Russia ordering troops into the eastern regions of Ukraine, which we saw a bit of volatility yesterday that we've reversed. We're not going to go into too much detail into what's happening there, but more look at the bigger picture quickly, Alan, here. Before the podcast, we were obviously discussing the podcast and what we've been talking about so far this year up until the last few weeks, and that's of course been central banks and inflation, which seems to be sort of slipping into the background at the moment as the Russia situation is really taking center stage. But of course, it's not a situation that's going to go away, Alan. So this is something that I'm sure people will be wondering. When we start to see maybe this news on Russia starting to quiet down, is what's happening there going to have any major impact on the thinking of central banks? Because, of course, when we were speaking a few weeks ago, we had the US looking at potentially, some analysts are saying, 7 interest rate hikes so far this year. And, of course, we've had one already from the Bank of England, and they probably look set to raise rates further. I mean, what's happening in Russia, Ukraine, does that have any bearing on thinking of central bankers, Alan, do you feel?
Well, I think obviously it has to because it's all part of the macro picture. But I think what is remarkable this morning, given the huge seismic development yesterday, where basically the tanks rolled into eastern Ukraine, admittedly territories that that are very pro-Russian, but nonetheless. Of course, the Germans stuck to their guns, and excuse the pun. The Germans did what they said they were going to do, and they've not pushed ahead with the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. So, of course, that's going to damage Russia economically with all the sanctions that are now being imposed on Putin. I mean, he really is like a 20th century dictator, in every sense, isn't he? He's looking like a cross between Saddam Hussein and Stalin in some ways. But the fact is that he's surrounded by these old generals who have a 1940s mindset, and of course. He's becoming increasingly isolated, I think, from what the Russian people actually want. Nonetheless, the situation is where it is. But the markets today are unaffected by it. I mean, the DAX is up higher. The DAX has risen. Obviously, that's the German stock exchange. I think the markets there are very set with the fact that the invasion is going to happen, sanctions will go ahead. There will be some economic fallout and damage to the German economy as a result of Nord Stream not going through. But of course, I think for markets longer term, and of course for inflation, we could well see energy prices squeezing higher. And that, of course, is the challenge that has to be overcome. So in regard to inflation moving out of center stage at the moment, it will no doubt be back there, you know, once we know what we're dealing with. However, you know, it's a fairly sanguine response this morning. And I think, the markets, in a sense, have priced this in either way. And perhaps Putin just wants to grab that little corner of Ukraine so he can have a small personal win back at home, because that's all that matters to him. It's all down to him. He makes the decisions. Of course, for the rest of the world, we have to deal with the fallout. But in regard to central banks, of course, we've seen the assets of some Russian banks in the UK frozen, and that will be repeated across Europe and, of course, in the US. So the sanctions will be biting hard. In regard to any changes in central bank policy, I think unless inflation starts to push seriously higher on the back of the energy price squeeze, I don't expect too much deviation from what they've already said they're going to do.
Yes, indeed. I think what you mentioned there, I think it's all about saving face for both sides now in this debacle. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. But, you know, going forward, as you mentioned there, you know, unless there's a dramatic increase in inflation, you know, of course, we're already running at very high levels, and central banks were saying they were starting to see it or foresee it peaking sort of around April time. You know, unless there's any changes to their forecast, I think those rate hikes are still on the cards. I don't think there's going to be any changes there. And to some extent, they're largely priced into markets at the moment. So, you know, as soon as it shifts back, which it will do, and people are talking about interest rate hikes as the main topic in markets, I don't think there's going to be too much in the way of major reaction unless we start to see, you know, huge move higher in energy prices that really start to hurt households. And then, you know, central banks have a real problem on their hands there. But I don't think that's going to be something that happens. I think we're going to be able to avoid that with the measures that, as you said, Alan, have already been outlined by central banks. So now let's move on to some more positive news, Alan. So we've got two companies in the FTSE 100 we're going to be discussing today, both posting record profits. So let's start, first of all, with Rio Tinto. Alan, what do the figures look like there?
Well, Rio Tinto is as one of the brokers said this morning, it's a cash machine. It's a massive cash generator. And of course, this is one of the oldest and largest mining conglomerates in the world. Of course, has direct exposure to commodity prices around the globe, which, of course, are very strong at the moment. We've seen earnings per share growth of 72% and also an 87% hike in the dividend. Now, I'm a shareholder in Rio, so I've stuck with the company thick and thin for the past 10, 15 years, and it's always paid a fantastic dividend. The current yield is 8.7%. So, you know, it's an essential part of any portfolio that wants to generate earnings. So cash flow was up 88% to nearly 18 billion. Revenues were up 42%. But although the numbers were slightly behind the Citi consensus, the dividend increase was well ahead of consensus. And of course, if a company signals a higher dividend payout, that means it must be exceptionally confident about the future. Of course, the great thing with a company like Rio is it's got economies of scale. It's such a huge company that the access to plant, the access to manpower, it has almost unlimited. But one of the potential clouds on the horizon is, of course, inflation. And of course, if inflation continues, it will push costs higher. That's, of course, power costs, to the projects and the infrastructure projects it's engaged with. But it's investing heavily going forward to turn operations into clean energy operations, and what it refers to as decarbonization. But Rio has a very low cost production ratio anyway, so it's not expected that will impact too heavily. But of course, if there are issues with costs going forward, that may well have a positive impact on Rio's growth plans, because as costs rise, Rio will be looking to or seeking out more profitable commodity projects to engage with, and that could well pay dividends for some of the companies at the small cap end of the sector, such as some of the companies, of course, presented on the UK Investor Seminar last night, Jonathan. Some of those companies could become targets. Their projects could be integrated into a large company like Rio, with its cost base, with its low production cost, with its huge economies of scale that it can offer. So that could play very positively into some of the small cap companies around. But nonetheless, going forward, I mean, it's a slam dunk for my portfolio. I will continue to hold Rio shares. The dividend payout at 8.7% is great. And, you know, the shares recently touched year lows of just under £44 a share. Had you picked those up then, you'd now be sitting on £56 per share. So a decent gain and an 8.7% dividend yield to boot. So a no-brainer for me.
Yes, I mean the dividend yield that you're looking at is astounding. You know, if you sort of look back, you know, over the last 10 years, we've obviously seen peaks and troughs in the commodity cycles, and certainly in the last year or so, with the hopes of a super cycle, we're seeing a very strong movement up in the prices of mining shares. But Alan, just looking here quickly at the shares today, bumper results, you know, huge dividend. We're off slightly. I mean, is that something to be concerned about, or is it more a situation of, you know, you're obviously in markets, you get sort of buy the rumour, sell the fact. We've had the results out. Yes, they were good. Do you think the market was hoping for more, maybe, or, you know, a little bit here on, you know, what's going on with this price? It's down, you know, strong profits like that. One may expect to see that the shares going through the roof, but, you know, they're off slightly. Is it, you know, I think it's a bit of profit taking and people waiting to see what happens with metal prices, such a strong run recently.
Yeah, it's possibly that, John. But I think as well, you know, even though those numbers were stellar in every sense, they were actually behind City expectations. So the City was expecting even better results. So the fact it's come off slightly today, it probably reflects some disappointment, but I don't imagine there'll be too many sellers on the back of that. As I say, the dividend yield alone makes these shares worth holding on to, and I view any dip in the share price as an opportunity to top up.
Indeed. Certainly, if you're looking at what's happening with commodity prices and some of the moves that Rio Tinto are making within their portfolio of assets, are very much sort of moving towards, as you said, those ones that are promoting ESG. So a bright future ahead for Rio Tinto. Now, Alan, moving on now, we're going to look at one of the other companies in the FTSE 100 that has reported record profits this morning, which shares are actually up 2.5% at the moment. It's Barclays. What have they produced over the last year, Alan, in terms of profits?
Well, of course, it's been a torrid few years torrid 10 years, I think, for the banks in the UK. We've had all the PPI scandals. We've had dark pool and liquidity scandals. Particularly with the credit crunch, going back to the credit crunch, there were issues over Barclays working with foreign investors to basically bolster its books. But nonetheless, I think Barclays versus Lloyds or the other retail banks offers another dimension to investors in regard to potential returns, because the most of the group's most of the group's profits come from its investment activities. It's the sixth largest global investment bank, and it's often overlooked because people tend to look at Barclays and think, well, it's just another high street bank. Its income, most of its income, comes from fees, commission and trading, and its activities in the market. So it's hugely successful in that regard. And of course, although there's an investigation ongoing into some of the activities of the chief executive, Jez Staley, he too is from an investment banking background. So he's very, very much steered the ship in that regard. And the shares have, you know, I picked up shares when they were on their knees a few years ago, and I've traded Barclays shares on and off for years because, you know, I picked up some in the, or just after the credit crunch, and saw the shares come back. It pays a dividend too, not spectacular, 1.5% dividend. So you do get that. But I think the real opportunities with Barclays are for capital gain. And I think the analysts have a net present value estimate on, or a book value estimate on Barclays at just on £3 per share. So it's still trading at a discount to that. But to, you know, today we've seen income up 1% to just under £22 billion. A huge reduction in credit impairment charges for bad loans. Saw pre-tax profits up 75% to nearly eight and a half billion. So it's paying a full year dividend of 4p. And also, the company is, or Barclays is, continuing to buy back shares. It's buying back another 1 billion shares, 1 billion share, but. Share buyback in addition to the £500 million announced earlier in the year. So the medium term chart targets for the group are unchanged. It's looking for a return on tangible equity in excess of 10%. And going forward, I think probably as we emerge from COVID, also if interest rates do go up, it's going to make Barclays a more attractive place to put your money. So that's another factor for investors to consider. And of course, that will impact directly on the share price. So I think Barclays has always offered great value, particularly the last few years. And once again, I remember talking to my old colleague, Malcolm Stacey, years ago, and he used to buy and sell Barclays shares. He said you could almost set your watch by the charting action, and he'd jump in and jump out. He'd buy low and sell high, and make sure he picked up a dividend in the process. So, I too hold Barclays, and will continue to hold Barclays for as long as. But certainly looking good value now.
You did mention there actually, which is quite interesting, and this is something that I feel makes Barclays different from other UK banks, you know, such as Lloyds, for example, in that they have a significant contribution to their profits from the corporate and investment banking side of things, and that's played out very well for them, sort of going back to sort of the last couple of years. If you look at the profitability, I mean, is that one factor by itself, Alan, for you making Barclays a standout bank listed here in London, or is there something else there that sort of for you looking at them makes them sort of stand apart from, for example, Lloyds and NatWest?
Yeah, well, I think Barclays has always had this dimension to its investment proposition, and that always attracted me. I know from speaking to people who have Barclays accounts, I don't think the service for retail customers is anything like as good as the service with some other banks. But regardless, if you're looking at Barclays as an investment, you know, that's always been the factor that I think has been the X factor in Barclays attraction as an investment. But I think going forward, obviously there's a ton of challenges out there. You've also got the challenger banks to consider too. But I think, you know, Barclays will react to that in its own good time, because it has made and continues to make such good money and profits from its investment banking activities.
Indeed. It's going to be very interesting to see tomorrow when Lloyds report how their profitability compares to Barclays. Now, we've obviously had NatWest. It's a bit of a soggy set of results from them. So, you know, you tend to get a bit of a trend coming through on banks. So it's going to be interesting to see Lloyd's reporting on Thursday of this week and how they move. So I know that's an investor favourite. So moving on now, Alan, we're going to be discussing a company that we haven't spoke about on the podcast actually now for some time. In Mosman Oil and Gas, you know, this is a company looking at its shares this morning up around 15%. What's driving this gain today, Alan?
Well, Mosman have a good business model. And, you know, there are a number of these small oil and gas producers out there that with the current oil prices and gas prices being so high are actually doing very well. But they operate very profitably. They're very canny in the way they operate the business. Mosman have a portfolio of assets in Texas, and in a production update back at the end of January, it increased its production to 17,344 barrels of oil equivalent, up 43% on the previous period. So that might not sound much, but it's a big jump. But the important thing is that it had undergone problems with its Falcon asset, which have now been resolved, and production is now back up to 113 barrels per day equivalent. Stanley project has been developed, and the other properties there, Livingstone continues to produce. Greater Stanley and Winters have undergone a workover, and the company today announced that the gas network construction that it had been building in Texas has been completed, and it will allow for the sale of gas from Winters to and Stanley 4. And it, you know, again, what the company does as it generates funds from the sale of oil or gas from one of the assets, that will be then ploughed back into bringing the other assets or the dormant wells back into production again. And that's what the company has done. So the production numbers for the current 6 months will be very interesting indeed, because I think that could mark a sea change in terms of the valuation of the company and also for the share price too. We could see exponential growth in the share price on the back of that. But that's not all. So we've got these oil and gas assets that are producing and continuing to produce, and certainly the outlook for the oil price is very strong over this year. So if Mosman continues to develop, then I think we could see a valuation well ahead of where we currently are. But there's another dimension too. The company also has a gas asset in Australia, in the Amadeus Basin. And the company's undergone exploration works. It's undergone magnetic surveys, aeromag surveys there. The other factor is that which makes this noteworthy is that several other companies there are already have already commenced exploration work at adjacent prospects. The Amadeus Basin is in the Northern Territories and it's prospective for helium, which of course is a gas that has numerous applications in medical, nuclear, and space technologies. There is demand well exceeds current production levels, so prices have risen over the past few years up over 100 times. And Australia is currently the world's leading producer. So it's estimated that there's some 1.5 trillion cubic feet of P50 unconventional gas with a potential 9% helium content. So that equates to 140 billion cubic feet of helium. And certainly the broker looking at the potential valuation impact it could have on Mosman said that, if Amadeus comes in with those sort of numbers, it could easily treble the current Mosman market cap, possibly more now with the updating production from Texas, and it's it's attributed an unrisked value to that, to the Amadeus asset, of $172 million. So when you consider that against the current market capitalization, which currently sits at just over 4 million, I think there's a tremendous amount of upside on offer. We've seen a little perk up in the share price over the past week, which I think is probably on the back of the gas network production. Observers there will no doubt be noting the progress the company's made, but the real upside is going to come, you know, once we get these production numbers for the current period, the oil and gas production numbers, and of course progress with the helium assets. So an awful lot more to come this year, and I think it's going to be a very big year for Mosman.
Yes, I mean, particularly what's interesting, of course, these companies that you're trading within the small cap area, you know, inherently more risky than the companies we discussed at the beginning in Rio Tinto and Barclays. But, you know, sort of looking at a company like Mosman with a market cap around 4 million, it's producing as well as exploring. You know, there's plenty of there for investors to get their teeth stuck into if they want to have a look at this company, because, you know, of course, explorers, they might have to raise capital. But, you know, in the situation with Mosman, is, you know, obviously they're looking at, you know, a situation where they're generating revenue from production that can support further activity. So certainly one for investors to have a look at there. Just to finish off now, Alan, we've got one company that we've given a few updates on in recent months, but the news is coming thick and fast from this company. It's Blencow Resources. What's the latest update from them?
Well, it certainly is, Jonathan. So Blencow Resources, of course, we've spoken before about the company, up to yesterday, in fact, it was a company with a single asset, and that, of course, is the Orem Cross Graphite project, which has huge potential. The company is currently undergoing a preliminary pre-feasibility study on the asset, and having undergone a PEA, which attributes a very substantial number. I think it's over $300 million to the asset. But the even more significant is the fact that that valuation comes from a very small area, in fact less than 1% of the territory that the Orem Cross Graphite project covers. So if the company brings this into production and it strikes takeoff agreements, it can then continue exploring across the territory and probably will find plenty of other graphite resources within the territory. But it was announced yesterday that the company had acquired an earn-in, or the right to earn into the Akele Congo nickel sulfide and copper project, which is located almost adjacent to the Orem Cross project. So in terms of deployment of staff and assets, of course, it's all in the one place. It's very easy for the company to manage. But this is a project that's got considerable potential, previously owned by Rio Tinto, of course, we spoke about earlier, and ASX-listed SEPA Resources until May last year. They spent between them some $15 million developing the assets and undertook 19,000 meters of diamond and reverse circulation drilling at the asset. So they've discovered massive sulfides there on the property, and the work that the company will undertake there, the company raised several million pounds earlier this year, and there is sufficient funding in place for the company to progress some phase one work there. So it works very well strategically. It's a very strong asset. It's got good provenance, and it means that as Cameron Pierce, the chairman, said, it represents a very exciting and low cost entry opportunity for Blencow to add nickel and copper to its graphite project. So the company is building and developing a significant portfolio of battery metals, and certainly looks now with that existing spend It means that Blenkow will have to spend just $1.5 million in deferred share consideration instead of using its cash. That looks to me to be a very good deal indeed. So congratulations to Cameron and Mike Ralston for getting that one across the line. So we're going to have a lot more news coming up in the next few months, but certainly the share price popped up to 5.6p yesterday on the news. It's come back down a bit at the end of trading yesterday, and it's currently trading at 5p this morning. And of course, 5p was the level at which the company raised a couple of million recently. So that's very much a floor in the share price. But with those two assets now within the company, and particularly the Orncross Graphite project being as advanced as it is, we've got a very, what I would say is a miserly market cap at just 7.6 million. You know, you've got peer group assets trading with market caps of $40 to $50 million in some cases. So the project is advancing well, and I would have expected by now to see far more value attributed to Blenkow, given the fact that we're now at pre-feasibility stage with the Orncross Graphite project. So I still think there's great value in the company at this level, and it's unlikely to be at 5p for much longer.
Yes, I mean, as you outlined there, you know, anything to do with the EV market, if they are able to solidify the presence of resources there and sort of moving towards production, you know, very exciting times to anyone involved in that. And of course, as you outlined there, traditionally looking at graphite, Blenkow, now looking at nickel and copper, potentially exciting times ahead for them. So just a recap now of the equities that we discussed today. We started with looking at Rio Tinto, which of course has a ticker of RIO. It was then Barclays with the ticker of BARC. It was then Mosman Oil and Gas with a ticker of MOSN. And to finish off then was Blenkow Resources, which has a ticker of BRS. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
So just as a reminder, I did mention at the beginning of the podcast, anybody that missed the UK Investor Magazine Metals and Mining Conference this week, the videos will be available on the UK Investor Magazine website very shortly. So do check those out. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.